The next case is 02-2130, State of Ohio versus Gregory Knight. Mr. Lowe.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Gregory McKnight's convictions and death sentence are invalid because the trial court excluded victim impact evidence to the benefit of the defendant, excluded relevant mitigation, and improperly instructed and considered the 2905.01C affirmative defense. In Proposition of Law 22, McKnight argues that the trial court improperly excluded victim impact evidence to McKnight's benefit and relevant mitigating evidence. Defense counsel sought to present testimony from Kathleen Murray, Emily Murray's sister, which contained victim impact evidence and relevant mitigation. First, counsel sought to present the trial court refused to consider relevant victim impact evidence to McKnight's benefit regarding the effect of the homicide on the Murray family and information about Emily Murray's character. The Murray stated that future court proceedings would have an adverse effect on the family by tearing it apart, either within themselves or each other. Additionally, the Murrays explained that Emily is the type of person who would give McKnight mercy because he is still a father and deserves to be loved, and that his children should not have him executed at the hands of the state. A life sentence, according to the Murrays, would honor Emily's beliefs.
Was the Murray family united in that view, or were there divisions within the Murray family? It wasn't clear to me in reading your brief.
Kathleen Murray submitted an affidavit containing that information, and in newspaper articles regarding Emily's character, the parents indicated her beliefs.
So the whole family opposed imposition of the death penalty?
That is correct.
And if I understood your brief correctly, you asked for additional time to, or the, who tried the case? Did the public defender try the case?
No. There was a private attorneys appointed to the case.
The attorney asked for additional time to develop this additional information?
Correct.
And was denied. Is the family allowed in the dispositional phase, the penalty phase, to take the stand and demand the death penalty?
No, they may not. And we are not asking for the actual opinion requesting a life sentence be presented before the trial court prior to sentencing. What we are asking is that the opinions regarding the effect of the homicide, which is relevant victim impact evidence, if the state was to present it, but here it benefited McKnight, to be presented to the trial court prior to sentencing.
I'm a little confused what you mean by that. The impact of the homicide, that the family was not deeply affected by this death, the family?
They were deeply affected by the homicide, but they, because of the homicide, that future court proceedings would continue to have an adverse effect on the family.
Wouldn't that be, in essence, the same thing as saying they don't want the death penalty, which our law currently prohibits giving an opinion on the penalty?
But it's not, they are not specifically requesting that. It is linked to permissible victim impact evidence that this court allows.
How is that relevant?
Because it goes to the effect of the family and how they are going to have to live with this case from the effect of the homicide.
Is there any evidence of communications between the family and the prosecutor as to what the family wanted?
Not in the record.
I'm really don't understand how that has a bearing on, for the jury's consideration, the, not the actual victim, but the family's belief here, whether it's to spare them the continuing attention to an appellate process, or...
First, this does not go to the jury, and we are not arguing that. This goes to the trial court prior to sentencing.
You're right, I'm sorry, but to the trial court prior to sentencing. How does that have an impact on the sentencer?
Well, if the family believed that the continued proceedings would not have an adverse effect on them, the state could present that as permissible victim impact evidence. What we are asking is that the defendant have the same opportunity to present the same victim impact evidence that is permissible. If not allowing the defendant to present that evidence, it is improperly tipping the scales in favor of the state. It would be, we're just asking for equal protection under the Equal Protection Clause, that McKnight have the same opportunity to present the same type of evidence that the state would be allowed to present.
Mr. Lowe, are you familiar with our decision in State versus Franklin?
Yes.
All right, doesn't that suggest that that would be inadmissible or shouldn't be considered by the court?
I disagree with that.
What is your impression then of what Franklin stands for in this regard?
I still believe that the defendant, that victim impact evidence is still permissible before the trial court, and that just because it benefits the defendant, that it should not be excluded.
But the family can't recommend any sentence. You agree with that?
I agree with that, but they are not actually recommending a sentence. They have said that the continued proceedings would have an adverse effect on them. The other evidence is that Emily's character, and this is evidence regarding the victim, is that she still believed that McKnight deserves to be loved, should not be executed because he is a father, and that his children should not be executed at the hands of the state.
And that's in the record?
Yes.
What more do you think need be done with that?
Other than...
You think that's binding on the trial court then?
It's not. The trial court actually didn't consider it. He excluded it. It's in the record because Kathleen Murray submitted an affidavit to defense counsel in order to develop this evidence. The trial court did not consider this.
So what is the import then of what you're arguing to us? You want us to send this back and tell the trial court to consider it?
At least for the opportunity to have this evidence presented to the trial court prior to sentencing.
Thank you.
Preclusion of this victim impact evidence violated McKnight's rights because it is impermissible to allow victim impact evidence that only benefits the state. If victim impact evidence is limited to the state's benefit, it creates an unfair playing field, which the scales of justice are improperly tipped in favor of the state. The whole purpose of Ohio's Victim Rights Act is to permit crime victims the right to a meaningful role in the criminal justice process. There is no limiting language from this court or the Ohio Victims Rights Act, which mandates that victim impact evidence may only be presented to the benefit of the state. The relevant mitigation evidence that McKnight sought to present was that McKnight should have received mercy because he is a father and executing him would have an adverse effect on his children. This is the evidence that should have been presented before the jury. This is relevant because it is linked to the history and background of McKnight. Under this court's decision in State v. Smith, it recognized that a family's love is mitigating evidence. The trial court improperly excluded this relevant mitigating evidence from the jury's consideration. Exclusion of this evidence impeded the jury's ability to carry out its task of considering all relevant facets of McKnight's history and background. Therefore, this court must vacate the death sentence and remand for a new penalty phase on this proposition of law. In proposition of law 20, McKnight argues that the trial court improperly brought the kidnapping affirmative defense before its own consideration and before the jury. Ohio Revised Code 29.05.01c contains an affirmative defense to kidnapping, which mitigates the crime if the victim is released in a safe place unharmed. Under this court's decision in State v. Sanders, it held that this is not an element of the crime. It is factually impossible to present evidence that a victim was released in a safe place unharmed when the victim is killed. Since Greg McKnight did not raise or present this evidence on this affirmative defense, it was error to require the jury to make a specific finding as to its existence, because an affirmative defense concedes an act by mitigating or avoiding criminal liability, which McKnight did not raise because he pled not guilty to the charge of kidnapping. There are two differences between this case and McKnight. First, McKnight did not waive this error because he properly filed a motion with a correct jury instruction, which preserves the error under this court's decision in State v. Brooks. Second, McKnight was prejudiced because the sentencer specifically turned this affirmative defense into a non-statutory aggravating circumstance. In the trial court's opinion, when discussing the aggravating circumstance, the trial court stated that McKnight, instead of releasing Emily Murray in a safe place unharmed, he shot her in the head, intentionally killing her. Unlike Sanders, McKnight is prejudiced because the trial court specifically relied upon this as a non-statutory aggravating circumstance. Additionally, the trial court specifically required the jury to make a specific finding turning this affirmative defense into an element of kidnapping. The trial court improperly turned an affirmative defense, which was not raised, into a non-statutory aggravating circumstance. This violated McKnight's due process rights, which require this court to reverse his convictions on count two and the third specification on count one. If there are no further questions, Gregory McKnight, respect.
Counsel, I have some questions.
Yes.
You lead off with the kidnapping charge in your brief.
Yes.
What was the evidence of kidnapping in this case regarding Emily Murray? What was the difference between Julius?
Greg Julius.
Greg Julius. What evidence was offered in the Murray case that wasn't offered in the Julius case regarding kidnapping?
As far as I can see, none. At first,
what evidence was offered of kidnapping?
According to us, none. Emily Murray was last seen at the Pirate's Cove and then found on Greg McKnight's property. Under the Sixth Circuit's ruling in Johnson versus Coyle, in order to prove kidnapping, additionally, the state must prove where the victim was killed. The state did not present evidence as to where Emily Murray was killed.
There was no evidence presented at all on that subject?
No.
So the evidence of kidnapping in the Murray case is that she left work a few minutes after the defendant.
Yeah, correct.
And she and her car next surfaced in Vinton County.
Correct. Additionally,
And with respect to Julius, the evidence was he and the defendant were last seen
together. However, McKnight was not charged with kidnapping of Greg Julius.
I understand that.
Okay.
My question is why?
That would be a question for the state. I would assume because there's no evidence.
What was the race of the defendant?
The race of the defendant, black.
What was the race of Murray?
White.
What was the race of Julius?
Black.
What was the evidence of a course of conduct? A continuing course of conduct that enabled the prosecution to jump this up to, I'm trying to explore the death specs.
Correct.
There are four death specs in this case, right?
Correct.
With respect to kidnapping, no evidence offered.
And if I may clarify that, there was evidence stating from Donald Dole, who lived down the road from the McKnight property in Vinton County, that saw Emily twice driving her car in that area. Also, a park ranger by the name of Officer Barr reported that a similar car with Emily McKnight and McKnight's wife was in Ross County.
Okay.
So she was familiar with the area.
But that would not, that would be evidence contra kidnapping.
Contra, correct.
So in both cases, there's really no evidence offered of kidnapping. In both cases, the victims are last seen in a county other than Vinton County, and they surface deceased on the defendant's property in Vinton County.
Correct.
Second spec is the two murders in a course of conduct.
Correct.
What is the course of conduct involved here?
We argue that there was no course of conduct. Under this court's jurisprudence.
I'm asking you, since unfortunately, regrettably, inexcusably, the state is not here, I'm asking you what evidence was presented to establish, that's required. I mean, the statute does not say you get death if you murder two people. It says you get death if you murder two people in a continuing course of conduct.
I would state that the defense's theory was that McKnight stalked women and that he duped her into Vinton County. However, under the state's own theory that he stalked women and preyed upon them with sexual conduct, Greg Julius is a male. So that theory would not carry and be evidence of a course of conduct.
Yeah, I'm asking you, what did they offer as a course of conduct?
They did not.
So they offered two murders.
A reading of the record does not show any separate evidence by the state attempting to prove the A5 specification.
Okay. They also, then you have the spec of murder to avoid detection. Is that the third one? And what did they offer on that?
I would assume the fact that the bodies were concealed in Vinton County on his property, was there evidence of that? That he tried to conceal the bodies, which...
Was that developed in the record? I mean, is that...
That's about the extent of their evidence.
So that for me, leaves the automobile.
Correct.
And that's a pretty tough mountain to climb for the defense, right?
Well, as I stated earlier, Emily was seen in Vinton County driving her own car. It does, just because she was in the area, it does not prove that McKnight committed the theft offense of the car. The state had the Bureau, BCI, dust the car for prints, and that came back negative for any prints linking McKnight in the car.
So the evidence of a robbery or theft, a murder, robbery, murder, which is what it takes to get the death spec.
Correct.
Is the car, her car, previously seen at the restaurant where she worked, ends up behind his trailer in Vinton County.
Correct.
With respect to the Julius defendant, there was no attempt for a death spec at all, right?
None
for kidnapping, none for killing him to avoid detection?
Correct.
Now, there were two other witnesses, or you object to in one of your propositions. There were two women called to testify that one, he asked the girl to go ballroom dancing.
Correct.
The relevance of that being what?
As we argue in our brief, the relevance wasn't of presenting this evidence wasn't proper. They attempted to prove that McKnight had sexual conduct, inappropriate sexual conduct with all these women, and therefore it must have happened with Emily Murray. However, the state failed to present any improper sexual conduct or activity with Emily Murray.
There's no rape murder spec here.
That is correct.
Okay. Was there any evidence from the girl that was asked to go ballroom dancing of any effort to kidnap her? Or?
No, other than that he asked her to go ballroom dancing.
What was her race?
I do not believe the record reflects that.
And the second woman he asked out and suggested a quickie in the back of the restaurant or something. So there were some sexual overtones to that one.
Correct.
What was her race?
I believe she was black.
I have no further questions.
If there are no other further questions, McKnight respectfully requests this court to reverse his convictions and death sentence due to the prejudicial errors of the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. The state of Ohio has not filed a brief and therefore has waived oral argument. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.